Hey friend, welcome to episode 198 of the Fitness Simplified podcast. If you don't know me, my name is Kim and I am the host of this podcast. Today's episode is a Q&A episode. I threw up a box on Instagram. Y'all submitted some great questions, wide variety of topics we're going to be covering today. We're going to be talking about how to handle the food police when they come a-calling. We're going to be talking about menopause weight loss. We're going to be talking about tracking calories while also trying to honor your hunger and fullness cues. Can those two things go together? Do we need to keep them separate? We're going to dive into that. And we're going to talk about calorie calculators. How the heck do you figure out which one to use? Why are they all so different? You ready? Let's jump in. Well, hello there. It's great to be here recording this podcast episode. I have a very interesting Q&A podcast for you. These are all questions that I took from listeners, viewers of my Instagram stories, threw up a Q&A box and said, let's talk. What is on your mind? Have some excellent questions that cover a variety of topics. Let's get into them. The first question is from Calitexi, and she asks, how do you deal with the food police when they're in your family? The food police. I've been there many times myself. The answer I'm going to give you is that it's going to depend on a couple of factors. One of those factors is the frequency of interaction. Are these family members that you live with, like in your home? Are the family members that you see often, but they're not in your house? Are these family members that you see, you know, a couple times a year at major holidays? Like you just saw them at Christmas and Thanksgiving, and maybe you're not going to see them until the summer now. That's gonna impact what I would suggest you do. Second factor that would impact my suggestion to you is your comfort level in addressing sensitive topics with this particular person. Like how do you think that's gonna go? How receptive do you think they might be to supporting you based on past behavior? If this is a person who's typically very supportive and you address important topics and they take you seriously and they listen, and they're open to that kind of discussion, you've asked for their support in other endeavors and they've given it, that would warrant one type of action that I'm going to suggest to you versus if you're like, this person is not really great at listening to me. We don't really have that kind of a relationship. They're kind of rude or they use things I say against me. I would suggest a different approach here. It's good to remember that people should not be commenting on our food. And when they do, there could be multiple reasons that they're doing it. Maybe they think they're genuinely being helpful, right? A lot of people have a lot of advice and they think they're being helpful. Maybe they do it because this is their lived reality. Perhaps their mom or their aunt or someone like that in their life polices their food. So this is how they approach the world because they haven't fixed their own crap yet. So that's a possibility. Often, it's more about the person who's saying things to you than it is even about you. It's like they're speaking to themselves when they're saying things like, are you sure you want another cupcake? Well, who they're really talking to is themselves. In their mind, they're like, do I really want this other cupcake? Well, let's just put, we're not having cupcakes, right? So they're kind of being like, okay, we're not going to do that. So they're talking to you, but they're really talking to themselves. And then I think less often, but certainly possible, is it's actually malicious. Like they're trying to hurt you. They're trying to embarrass you. They're trying to, you know, pick at something that they know is difficult for you. I think that's less often, but it's definitely a possibility. Whatever the case may be, as far as their motivations, their reasoning in policing your eating, you have every right to set boundaries. Before I'd say like, let's just say like, hey, I'm not talking to you about that. Let's talk about some other things you could do. Although it's appropriate and often necessary to just say like, you know, I'm not going to talk with you about my food. But before that, let's consider if this is a person that you actually live with. So this is your spouse or you live with your mom. This is a family member you live with. I would have you consider that first, that question that I posed a bit ago, which is how, based on how they treat you otherwise, how receptive will they be to you asking for their support directly? I have this conversation with my Fitter After 40 members a lot. They need a specific form of support from their spouse, but they haven't yet directly asked for this form of support, whatever it might be. If you think this person will be supportive, share directly with them. I'm going to give you like a little script here that you could use. You could say something like, hey, you know, when you see, and I, by the way, I would do this at a time when they haven't just commented on your food. We don't want them to feel super defensive. We want this to be productive. So I'd bring this up at a different time other than when they've just said like, hey, sure you want some more Oreos. So you could say something like, hey, you know, when you say things like, are you sure you want that? Or wouldn't you rather have an apple? Or insert whatever it is that they're saying, like give them some concrete examples. When you say that, I feel blank. And then tell them how you feel. How does it make you feel? I feel anxious. I feel stressed about my approach to eating. I feel judged. However it is you're feeling, tell them how you're feeling. When you say, give them an example or two, I feel blank. And then you can expand a little bit further and you could say, you know, I'm working hard on, and then insert whatever is appropriate here. You could say, I'm working hard on my relationship with food. I'm working hard on developing flexibility around food. I'm working hard on allowing all food in my diet while meeting my daily targets. Okay, whatever is appropriate there. So this is when you say these things, I feel this way. I'm working hard on blank. And then ask specifically for their support. You could say, it would mean a lot to me if you could let me work on this on my own without commenting at all. Is that something you're willing to do? Like actually ask for a response. It would mean a lot to me. Tell them that. This would mean a lot to me if you could let me work on this on my own without commenting about my food at all. Is that something you are willing to do? Give that a try. Now, if you have a reason to believe that a conversation like this won't end well, you can have a standard reply ready for when they do comment on your eating that indicates that you're not willing to engage on this topic. If you don't want to just outright say like, I'm not going to talk to you about my nutrition, you could say that. There's nothing wrong with saying that. But if you're like, I don't really want to say that yet, let's have you try this first. So just get yourself a little reply. They comment on your food. They say like, pancakes for breakfast, or sure that's what you want. You can just say something like, I'm good, or I got this, like little teeny short phrase. I really like just like, yeah, I'm good, or I got this. And this is important, change the subject immediately by asking them a question about something you know they like to talk about. They say inappropriate thing about your food. You say, oh, I'm good. Hey, I heard the Eagles got crushed last night. What's going on with their defense? Or you say, they inappropriate comment about your food. I got this. Hey, how did that presentation you go do today? How did that go? I think I just totally bungled that. Let me try that again. They make a comment about your food. You say, I got this. Hey, tell me about that presentation you did today. You see what I'm saying? So you say something short that lets them know, not talking about you about my food. And then you turn the conversation to something they're going to want to talk about. And you see if you can just move it along. A lot of times they'll get the hint and they'll stop. But if they do not, 0% problem with just saying, hey, I'm not going to be discussing my nutrition with you. That's your firm boundary. Not going to be discussing my nutrition with you. Now, my approach with extended family members who you don't see as often is exactly the same, except for I would not chat with them about my nutrition, my eating habits, weight loss, right? I would not bring that up with them. It's often not a good way to go. Like, just don't mention how you're eating or why you're eating. This is probably not a person, you know, Uncle George, who you see twice a year, probably not a good person to let know about exactly how you're setting up your nutrition and why and what your goals are. You can just kind of skip past all of that and handle it in the way I said before about just saying like, oh, I'm good. If they're making comments about your food and then offering up a topic of conversation, maybe get a couple in mind before you go to the event where you're going to see this family member you don't see too often. But whenever you do see Aunt Mabel, she comments on your food. Come up with some topics you could ask her about and just tell her like, oh, I'm good. Ask her about that. And practice just saying, I'm not going to be discussing my nutrition with you. If you're like, I think this isn't going to go so well. Remember, you do not owe anyone explanations about your eating habits. You get to decide how much you want to share. You get to decide all of that. You're doing well. It's totally normal to not feel comfortable with other people policing your food. Nobody likes it. It drives me crazy when it's happened in the past. And you can decide person by person the best way to handle it. I hope this has helped. All right, next question from Mary. Mary says, are there times that you would recommend someone not tracking calories? Like, say, they're working on their hunger cues or their emotional eating, etc. Great question, Mary. And absolutely, there are times when tracking is not the best approach. Some of those times might be if a person has a history of disordered eating, I would perhaps not recommend tracking. If someone has been trying to track, and even with coaching around best practices for tracking, it just feels burdensome, I could suggest not tracking. As far as the one you mentioned, not tracking because you're working on hunger cues / emotional eating, I have worked with literally hundreds of women on those things at the same time as they are tracking calories. In this situation, it does not have to be either or. One can certainly work on either one of those or both of those without calorie tracking, right? So you could work on your relationship with food. You could work on your hunger cues. You could work on your emotional eating and not at all track calories. You don't have to do that. But tracking doesn't necessarily impede working on those things either. You can track calories and follow your hunger cues. You can track calories and work on improving your emotional eating. I get the sense based on your question that for you, it is right now, that these are not working well together. So let's talk about what might be happening and what you can do if you want to still track calories and work on eating according to your hunger cues and address emotional eating. One of the things that can help, I am a huge proponent of pre-logging one's food the day before. My Fitter After 40 members who do this are far more successful at their weight loss. So each night, take a few minutes to go into your app, whether you use Lose It or MyFitnessPal or whatever you're using, plug in what you're going to eat the following day. I like to have people start by plugging in all of their protein till they reach their protein target, and then adding in some form of micros in the form of vegetables and fruit, and then filling in the rest with whatever you'd like till you hit your target in the app. Now, once you have done that, and this is where you might be struggling to reconcile tracking and following your hunger cues, once you have that food logged, remember, you can wait to eat that food until you are appropriately hungry, and you can stop eating it when you're satisfied. Now you might be thinking, but what if I don't eat it all? Like, that's my food. Push back on thoughts like that. If in your mind you're like, wait, what do you mean not eat it all? That's the food I log. These are my calories. In your mind, you're like, those are my calories. I get that much. That's mine. You can say things back to yourself like, I can save the rest for later when I'm hungry again. You can ask yourself, does this app know how full I feel, or do I know how full I feel? Obviously, it's you. You can say to yourself, I make the decisions, not the app. This is just a tool. So talking back to those thoughts in your head that are kind of pushing you to eat more than you are hungry for. Really important in order to be able to track your calories while also following your internal cues of I'm hungry or I'm satisfied, those kinds of things. So really push back on those thoughts. Now, sometimes what can happen is that a person ends up under eating their protein when they're really paying attention to their hunger and fullness cues. And this can be easily addressed by having your meals top loaded with protein. So start with your protein, eat most of it or all of it. If you find that you tend to like, okay, I'm feeling satisfied now, and then you end up leaving your protein a lot, start your meals with that. Eat that first. Even top load your day with protein if you find that you end up not eating as much toward the end of the day so that you can still hit your protein target. It's just so important for preserving your muscle mass in a deficit, helping you to feel satisfied. So that's one strategy I would also use. Using the tracking apps as a tool to help you and not a rigid set of rules that trumps how you actually physically feel is so important, as is cultivating a flexible approach. So remind yourself, this is a tool I'm using. This is not my dictator. All right, hope that helps, Mary. Next question is from MellyMel99. MellyMel says, how can I find the accurate amount of calories needed to lose weight? It is all so confusing and so all over the place. You're right, MellyMel. There are many different formulas. There are many different calorie calculators, and each one is impacted by what you put into it. So the rate of weight loss you say you want. If you say you want to lose 2 pounds per week versus 1 pound per week versus a half a pound per week, that is going to impact how many calories the calculator says you should eat. A lot of the calculators require you to put in your body fat percentage. If you guess higher versus lower, that's going to impact the results it gives you as far as how many calories they think you should be eating. Your activity factor, what you put in for that, is going to impact the calories that they give you. It's important to remember that any formula, any calculation you use, is just a starting point, and then you adjust based on results. Now, inside Fitter After 40, I teach you how to set your own calories, and then I go over your work with you. I have coached hundreds and hundreds of women to lose weight, so I can pull from my own knowledge and, based on your particular circumstances, guide you to a target that is going to work for you as that starting point. You can get on the wait list for the next round of Fitter After 40 at the link in my show notes or at the link in my Instagram bio. Now, if you want to get started right now, you can grab my free 5-day fat loss crash course. This is a free 5-day series. I help you set up your fat loss plan, including your calories. I'm going to put that link in the show notes as well. You can also get it on my website, kimschlagfitness.com. It'll say free 5-day fat loss crash course. Super important. I'm not helping you lose weight in 5 days. That does not work. I'm helping you over the course of 5 days to set up your nutrition and exercise plan so you know what you are doing. That's the crash course, is setting up. So by the end of it, you know how many calories to eat, how much protein to eat, how much to be moving, those kinds of things. Now, there is another way to set your calories without any formula at all. And this can work very well. To do that, here's what I would suggest you do. Take 2 weeks. Make sure that they are normal weeks, not holiday weeks, not vacation weeks. Normal, typical weeks that are representative of your daily life. And then during those 2 weeks, track everything you eat. Also track your steps for those 2 weeks. Try not to change anything. Try not to change what you're eating versus usual. Try not to change how much you're using now that you're wearing the step tracker. I say using, how much you're moving now that you're wearing the step tracker. We want to try and get a good picture of how much you usually eat and how much you usually move. So just eat and move as per usual. Now, at the same time, during this 2-week period, while you are tracking your food and tracking your steps, I want you to begin weighing yourself each morning. At the end of 2 weeks, average your daily weigh-ins for week one, average your daily weigh-ins for week two. Compare the averages. Okay, if the average is about the same, you're at maintenance. Now, once we have found your maintenance calories, in order to put you in a deficit, we reduce the amount of calories you're eating. So we look at that and you adjust down. You're also going to, in order to be able to adjust those calories and adjust your steps, you're going to need to average those. So take your calories that you've eaten for the last 2 weeks, average them out and see, like, okay, I've basically maintained my weight the last 2 weeks. Let's see, on average, what have my calories been and how much have I moved? And then with all that information, we can adjust how much you're eating and how much you're moving to put you into a calorie deficit. It's usually some combination of those two, reducing your how much you're eating and increasing how much you're moving. Now, how much do we adjust it? It's going to depend. If you have a lot of weight to lose, if you have obesity, you could go up to a 30% reduction. If you're looking to, like, lose the last 10 or 15 pounds, go with like a 15 to 20% reduction. Okay, so we want to reduce the amount of calories and you want to increase how much you're moving. If you just increase how much you're moving, it's going to be really difficult to be successful. You definitely need to tackle the nutrition piece as well. And then as far as how much to increase your movement, you can start with where you are and just add on an amount that feels comfortably like a stretch for you. It doesn't have to go, if you're like, whoa, I'm only moving 4,000 steps. That's not how high I should be. 10K is not like the be all end all. We do want you to get up higher than 4,000. At least getting to 7,000, 7,500 is impactful for health. I do find for weight loss, I like 10,000 to 12,000 steps for people. I find that very useful, but you don't have to, one, go right up there. And you don't have to go that high if it's just not going to be a good fit for your lifestyle. But we do want you to move more. So you could set a goal to move 500 steps on average more daily, or 1,000 steps on average more daily. Look to add some more in. And then over time, you can keep ramping that up till you get to a good number that helps you to sustain weight loss. All right. Now, this last question, I'm actually going to combine two questions. Gazriel said, just simply, it wasn't even a question. It was just a statement, weight loss and menopause. And then Jennifer C. says, I'm 54 and suddenly I cannot control my weight. What is happening? All right. So Gazriel and Jennifer, let's talk about it. First thing to know is you are not alone. This is incredibly common in menopause. These are the women I work with all of the time in Fitter After 40. These are the women who contact me on Instagram. I think it's important to start with what is not happening. Okay. We want you to understand, I don't know who he is. I want you to understand what is not happening in your body. A switch has not been tripped when you entered perimenopause or menopause that has downregulated your metabolism. Okay. Just because you're over 40 or over 50, your metabolism has not downregulated. Your hormones have not adjusted so that you cannot lose weight. There has not been any big change happening like that. I know it can feel like it has. I get it. I have been there. It can feel like something like that has happened. I promise it's not the case. I have helped hundreds of women as their coach and thousands via social media to lose weight in menopause. It is 1000% possible. You can do it. And believing that is going to be critical to your success, because the reality is that weight loss takes time and it's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. If you mistakenly identify the inherent difficulty of losing weight to mean there's something wrong with me, you're not going to be successful. So we've got to get that thought out of your head that there's something wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. Specifically, if you're like, but my metabolism, but my estrogen, let's talk about both of those for a minute. There is good research on what happens to our metabolism as we age. There was a very large study done on over 6,000 people within the last 3 years. It was August 3 years ago, maybe only 2 years ago. In the study, they looked at a database of over 6,000 people. They looked at people ranging in age from 9 days old all the way up to 90 years old. And they looked at their energy expenditure. And what they saw is there was not a steep drop in middle age. Did you expect that there would be? Everyone expected that there would be, right? We're like, wait a minute, there's something going on with my metabolism that starts in my 40s, in my 50s. They did not find this. In fact, they did not see any decline in metabolism until age 60, and then it was very, very slight. So they saw, starting from the time the person was a baby all the way up to age 20, they can see that it was increasing, their metabolism increasing from 20 all the way over to age 60, it remained stable. So there has not been a drop in your metabolism, and this is important to know. And even if you're listening, you're like, wait, but I'm 61. It was a very slight decline that began at age over 60, okay? So it is not your metabolism. And this is really important. We don't want the problem to be your metabolism. There's not much you can do if the problem is your metabolism, right? So that's point one. And then point two, what about the impact of your hormones in menopause? How is that impacting you? There is an impact in the decline of your estrogen on your body fat distribution. You will tend to notice that if you have excess fat, that you tend to store it more in your midsection, in your belly, in your gut, whatever you want to call it. That's where we tend to store our excess fat in menopause and perimenopause, which is a shift from where you have stored it before, perhaps. Perhaps before you were storing it more in your legs, in your glutes, and now you're noticing this excess fat around your midsection. The good news is you will lose that fat the same way you lose fat anywhere else on your body. It's not like a different, like, menopause belly fat protocol. That's super important to know. Now, the other factor that can be different in terms of weight loss for perimenopausal and menopausal women is that you often face more hurdles. So things like night sweats, hot flashes, achy joints, brain fog, depression, anxiety, low energy, increase in allergies, all of these things, or whatever your particular cluster of these things is, can make fat loss more challenging. So the key is going to be managing your symptoms so that you can successfully create and sustain a calorie deficit. So important. We have to work on managing these symptoms. These are extra hurdles you have that people who are not in menopause and perimenopause may not have. Now, another factor that can make weight loss harder for women in this stage of life to lose weight is a lifetime of misinformation about diet and exercise. We've been steeped in diet culture our whole entire lives. We've watched every fad come and go and come back again. So untangling the impact of that on your weight loss attempts is important as well. Like what pieces of, I don't know, put this in air quotes, knowledge, because it's not actually knowledge, it's fake, do you have in your brain? There's probably a lot of myths that you are operating on that just are not true. And so we want to declutter your brain of these things. And we want to move away from, you know, the diet culture that has made us do things like eat 900 calories or eat just cabbage or whatever the fads are you've tried. I'm sure right now you're like running through a list of them in your brain, right? Because we lived through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s and all the crazy diets. And we have a lot of things that are swishing around in our brain about how we should look and how we should eat and various ingredients and various foods and so-called superfoods. And so we have to work to, from a knowledge perspective, figure out, okay, which of those is true and which of them is false. And then from an emotional perspective, really work at things like, what about being a member of the Clean Plate Club our whole life? Because grandma and ma stood over us in the kitchen and were like, you're not getting up till you eat every last bit of that. I worked for that with my hard-earned money, right? So we have all of these things to untangle. And that is an important piece of the puzzle when it comes to losing weight. Now, the actual steps of weight loss will remain the same. We're going to need you to create a calorie deficit by reducing calories and increasing movement. And as I mentioned earlier, just focusing on the latter, on that just increasing movement, is a common mistake. So we need to work on reducing calories and increasing movement. We need to work on having you eat enough protein to support feeling full and satisfied, as well as prevent loss of muscle, which really can ramp up in perimenopause and just as we age. And we need you to strength train to support that muscle maintenance and growth and health, as well as your aesthetics. So the formula remains the same with the addition of, we need to tackle any hurdles you're facing in terms of perimenopause and menopause symptoms. And we also need to work on what has gone on in your brain in terms of information about weight loss and your body and the things that you think about yourself and those kinds of things. So that is the additional work that we have as women in perimenopause and menopause. You can use any of the resources I mentioned above that are going to be in the show notes, joining the waitlist for Fitter After 40. We really dive deep into all of those things I just talked about menopause weight loss. You can get on the list for my free 5-day fat loss crash course that can really help with that information piece about what does work and what doesn't work for weight loss. If you're looking for a really gentle start to weight loss and working on your mindset, which again can be so important for women in midlife, your mindset around food, how you think about your food and your body, I would highly recommend you check out my course, Fitter by the Day. This is a self-paced course. It's available all the time. It's available. You can grab it right now. Very low price point. It's a 30-day course where you spend time working at moving your body more, at eating more protein, and mindfulness around your food. And we talk about your mindset all throughout and improving your mindset throughout it. There's an incredibly powerful tool in there that's going to help you be consistent with all those things I just mentioned. So check that out, Fitter by the Day. I will put that in the show notes as well. I want to give you ladies as many resources as I can, you know, on a full spectrum from free, that's just, you know, some emails from me, all the way up through these Fitter by the Day, which is this self-paced course. You'll be spending a lot of time with me virtually on that course. So, you know, you and I won't be conversing, but you're going to feel like we are because I'm going to walk you through it step by step through video modules and homework assignments for you, all very small and bite-sized that you can fit into your life, all the way up through Fitter After 40, where you actually spend a lot of time being coached by me personally. I hear the things that you have to say and I coach you through them in real time. So hopefully one of those resources is going to feel like a great fit for you to get started right now. I hope that this has helped. I'll be back with another podcast next week. We're going to be talking about New Year's resolutions from the perspective of it's been a couple of weeks and maybe actually it'll only have been 1 week. It's been a week and I'm not feeling so hot. How can I adjust? That's what we're going to be talking about next week. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Fitness Simplified podcast. I hope you found it motivational, inspirational, educational, organizational. If you did find value in this episode today, it would mean a great deal to me if you would leave a rating and review on whatever podcasting platform you are listening to this episode on. It really does help to get this podcast in front of other people. Thanks so much for being here.